Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. I haven't even tested. There we go. Yeah, it's on.
Come on, drummer. Let's hit it.
Do you hear it?
No, I can't.
Oh, okay. It's playing. Hang on.
What is it?
Yeah, it's playing. I don't know how to route that over.
From coast to coast.
There it is.
At a rough world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com.
So, okay, so if you talk right now, are you echoing? Try it.
I don't hear myself. Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Yeah, you are. Because if I turn that back down, then you won't be able to hear the intro.
/allaboutwineBTR. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
All right, let me turn that. So if you hear echo, then I need to turn this back to the microphone. That's going to be okay, that's fun. We'll see how that works for a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
I got to make sure that your audio is going through too, and I don't think it will.
Uh-huh. But when mine's going through, it echoes, it seems.
Let's try that again, because, yeah, otherwise it won't stream to anybody.
There, I got an echo.
You got the echo again. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I might have to
turn
it down or something. I don't know if it's loud echo or if it's just like a...
It's a repeat is what it is. I say something and it repeats it. Same voice, right? You know, same volume right back at me.
Yeah. That's annoying. I know how that is. Okay. Well, we have somebody on. It wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't there before.
Okay. Well, we're doing technical problems here, technical difficulties and all that. So I'm still getting a little bit of echo myself in the background.
Okay. It's not real loud. It's just annoying.
No, it isn't. It's not totally annoying, but
okay.
So we do have a guest tonight. It is Vanessa Price. Let me find her goodie page here. Okay, Vanessa Price, sommelier, managing partner of Mavericks Steakhouse, in Modern Steakhouse in New York, and manages a bar, Shark Bar, newly opened surfside inspired bar in Montauk. So I'm not going to go through all of her stuff. We'll let her tell us that and what all she does and everything. And we'll bring her on. I guess this is her. Welcome to All About Wine, Vanessa.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Glad you can join us tonight. So, you are quite a busy person, from what I can see from what I read on your resume here. Tell us, if you will, a little bit about yourself and how you got to the point where you're, where is it? I lost your email again. Why am I having a problem navigating? There it is. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got where you are now.
Wow, that's just a really large question. I'm not sure how to dig in to even answer that.
We got an hour.
How far back should I go to the birth date?
When did you become interested in wine? Let's go back to that.
I became interested in wine when I had my first wine job, which was just a college job working at a wine bar in Louisville, Kentucky, which is where I'm from.
Oh, wow. And you grew to love wine from that, or was it later? Oh, Mike, I'm getting bad echo.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm so sorry. I'm having trouble. I'm getting really bad feedback.
Yeah, me too. Mike, can you do something about this?
Yeah, let me try something real quick. All right, try that.
Try that and see what happens there. Is that better on your end too, Vanessa?
It sounds better.
All right, good. We, for some reason, having a little bit of switchboard problems tonight and trying to get it cleared up. So is that in Kentucky? Is that where your wine bar, is that where you fell in love with wine, or is that just happened to be your first job in wine?
That was my first job in wine. It was really just meant to be a college job, but it was something that opened me to the possibility that, you know, wine is not really something that you typically hear about a lot where I grew up, at least when I grew up, probably more so now. So it was my first exposure to it, you know. And then I eventually, not eventually, a couple, when I graduated from college, I moved to New York City. And it was one of those things where it's like, well, I haven't figured out what I want to do yet, so I know a little bit of something about wine, or at least I thought I did. Now I recognize I know nothing about wine. I just, you know, thought more of myself at the time and, you know, got a job working at a wine bar on the Upper East Side. It was next to Itasumi, which is a two-star Michelin that was on the Upper East Side for a long time. No longer there, and that was the beginning of my wine journey in New York.
Oh, you said you didn't have wine when you grew up. Where did you grow up?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, so you are a Kentucky girl originally, huh? Okay.
I am a Kentucky gal.
And hence the first job there, too.
Yeah.
So you got to New York, you started learning about wine. When did you decide to jump into it with both feet and become a sommelier?
Well, I mean, that's sort of a tricky question, right? How does one become a sommelier? Sommelier is a job title.
It is, yeah. But
right?
It requires a lot of testing and a lot of knowledge.
Yes, it does. I think, you know, I think I was in denial for a long time that I was in the business. I think that kept finding opportunities and experiences that were really cool and interesting in wine. And one day I sort of looked back and went, oh, I've kind of made a career out of this thing. I don't know that there was ever a moment where the light bulb went off that, yes, that is what I am doing. It was more like a lot of really interesting, happy circumstances.
Ah, okay. And then you, so from the point where you realized that the wine was going to be the focus of your career, then you took the sommelier test and studied for it and got your certification, or was it after you were in a restaurant that was serving wine, you were in charge of that? I mean, when did this happen?
Well, I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, I don't really know how one there's no such thing as a sommelier test, right? Like, there are many different entities that certify for wine all around the world. Some are regional, some are national, some are global, some are service-based, some are theory-based. But none of them make you a sommelier. That's just a job title on a floor. I did eventually get my level 4, my diploma from the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. So all in, from levels 1 to 4 was probably like a 8 or 9 year journey.
Wow.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
It does. It, you know, I've heard that before from other people. I had to was set certification, and they say it does take a long time to get everything, and it's not easy either. You got to have a lot of knowledge on it. So you are now a manager of a Mavericks, which is in New York. Mavericks is a steakhouse with a tremendous wine list, or what is Mavericks?
Well, I'm the owner of it.
Oh, are you?
Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the owner of it. It's a steakhouse in the Hamptons with a Wine Spectator Grand Award recognized wine program. I'm also the wine director for Wildflower Farms, which is an Auberge resort in the Hudson Valley. I am the resident sommelier for the Today Show. I have a national best-selling book called Big Macs in Burgundy. Kind of a few different things.
You really spread quite thin there. you mentioned book. You are author of Big Macs in Burgundy. What is that? Just pairing wine with everyday food?
Yeah, basically, the subtitle of the book is Wine Pairings for the Real World, and it's basically just trying to take the idea of food and wine pairing and trying to, I hate the word dumb it down, because I don't think it's something that is particularly complicated to begin with, nor is it something that we just should assume people need to have things dumbed down for them. It's just putting things into context, and sometimes putting things into context with foods that we recognize and enjoy on a much more daily basis is a way to reframe the concept. So
mm-hmm.
That's what the book is about.
Oh, no, that sounds interesting. Is that still available on, in hard copy and online if someone is interested?
Yep. You can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores across the United States. You can buy it a lot of places.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I've talked to different authors that the book's become out of print, and I'm just curious if it was still available.
I've been very fortunate that it's done very, very well. It's still a top performer on Amazon.
Oh, good. That's the only book you've written then, just the one? Are you in the process of doing any more?
Maybe one day. All the other aforementioned things have kind of, taken a majority of my time, but maybe we'll get back to that one day. Writing a book is a unforgiving, unrelenting process, so you have to mentally be ready to... Like when you do it once, you have the naivete of not understanding the misery you're signing up for. But if you do it again, you really got to be committed to it. Now you know.
And now you know what it's like.
Yeah. Now you know what you're signing up for.
Yeah. I've talked to authors before. I've had authors on the show. And they, I say, well, are you going to write another book? And I always get that same, I don't know, type response, because they answer that first one. You know what's happening.
Well, I think it was Hemingway that said, the closest man will ever know to childbirth is to write a book.
And
the pain associated.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Every time I've thought about writing a book, I thought, oh, no, I don't, and it just, I throw the idea away as fast as it comes to my head. So, the wines that you have at the restaurant, are they, do they concentrate basically on domestic or California or New York, or are they worldwide, or what do you offer there?
It's an international wine program with a little over 500 selections that span from Northern Hemisphere to Southern Hemisphere, main staple countries, more esoteric countries, natural wine to classic wine, price ranges, $75 to $8,000 and everything in between.
Wow. So quite a wine cellar there. All sorts of stuff there. I'm always impressed by the big big selections of wine cellars.
Takes a lot to manage them.
Yeah, I can imagine. Are you the one that manages the cellar? Do you have someone else that is basically in charge of it, since you probably are, got your plate full of all sorts of other stuff running the restaurant?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I mean, today was inventory day. I'm always a part of inventory day. It's a very holy day in the monthly calendar of a restaurant. It's the first day of every month. But, you know, the day-to-day, we definitely have a team that assists, and I'm very lucky to have that team.
Yeah, that's always good. And I'm curious about something, too, simply because a guest recently and I were talking about the fact that a lot of time restaurant personnel are not trained in the wines. Are yours, you put them through a program, I guess, is what I'm looking at, or a familiarity phrase so that they can talk intelligently about the wines? How do you approach that?
Well, we're a restaurant in the Hamptons, so I'm not sure that you can apply the same model to us that you would to restaurants that are open year-round. We're open for 5 months out of the year. It's a 240-seat restaurant that on a Saturday night will see between 600 and 800 people. I have over 120
wow.
people on my staff. So the realities are it's not really physically possible to train everyone. That being said, we do have by the glass trainings and weekly check-in trainings and weekly, wine classes that are voluntary, but this is a very specific model. So I don't think that it could really be compared to like a traditional restaurant model.
Well, it's still though, I mean, when you are serving over 500 wines on your list, you have the people, your waiters and waitresses, I should have some knowledge of the wines that are available. Or do you have someone that, if your waiter is asked a question about wine, do they have a sommelier that they can pull over, if not use someone else, and have them make suggestions and stuff? Or do you have your wait staff? Okay. Yeah, I just, like I say, we were just talking about a guest a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was, that we were talking about the how restaurants, it's always good to have some knowledge about what's going on there. Let's see. I'm reading the resume, I guess, that was sent to me. I keep jumping back to this pink, light pink, deep pink, orange skin wines and all that. You seem to be an advocate of these. Is that
advocate of them? I'm not sure I'm following.
Additionally, Vanessa created a strong and unique skin contact section. Okay, with education on light pink, deep pink, and orange skin contact wines. So it sounds like that. Create a strong and unique skin contact section.
I don't really think it's that unique. It's just, rosé, orange wines, white wines that are, fermented on their skins. Like, it's just it's no different than having a red wine section or a white wine section or a dessert wine section. Anything that's like the stylistic impression is totally driven by that short time period, that 12-hour to 48-hour time period on the skins, or a total fermentation, which is a deviation from the traditional way that it's done, like with white wine, just a way to categorize them. I wouldn't say it's something that, like, I think that I'm doing any. I mean, there's plenty of people that organize their wine programs that way, so I definitely wouldn't call myself unique in that, but we do categorize our wines that way.
I see. Okay. Because it seems like orange wines are becoming a very, what's my word, mainline thing now, a lot of places. Orange wine is becoming
I think they're becoming a curiosity. I don't think they're quite, I wouldn't say mainstream. I mean, I offer them by the glass, by the bottle, have lots of conversations about them, and it still makes up a pretty small percentage of sales. But I definitely think that 10 years ago, nobody's ever heard of orange wine. So that's definitely
right.
a change.
Yeah, it's becoming something that, you know, I think more and more people are becoming aware of. And you're probably right. I think it might be just a curiosity thing. Orange wine. Let's give this a try. But then they realize that it's not a whole lot different than different blush wines or rosés.
Well, that's why they all kind of go in the same category, right? They're just, it's a style that's dictated by a specific kind of skin contact as opposed to traditional white and red fermentation, you know?
Sometimes
you can't differentiate them from rosés.
Yeah, and the flavor, if you don't, people don't look at the color at all, then it is just like a rosé. So, yeah, you're right. How long has the restaurant been open?
We opened last year. Last year was our first season. We're in our sophomore season now, so we're just trying to
keep our heads
above water. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize. I was thinking it was older than that. Well, that's good. At least you didn't try to make it through the COVID years. So many people had problems with that.
Yes, I'm very grateful we missed those.
It says here your menu has at least 50 selections under $100. This is includes steaks and local fish and all that stuff.
Yep, all that stuff. Steak, local, seafood, vegetables, all the classic stuff that you look for at a steakhouse.
And, boy, you just the number of seats on that. So it's 5 months a year. Why 5 months?
240 seats, 5 months a year.
Why 5 months?
Do you know where the Hamptons? Do you know what the Hamptons is or where it is?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Okay. So I mean, that's the season, right? It goes May to September, and that's the season.
And it pretty much dies off from there. But you would think that you would get some sort of business after that. Well, maybe not. I don't know. I've never tried to run a business in the Hamptons. So, yeah, I would have no idea how that works.
If you had, like, a 60-seat restaurant, sure, but not a 240-seat restaurant. You have to be able to do volume to be able to justify everything that comes with it, right? Like, it's a scaled business. So 240 seats is not sustainable in a low season.
I see what you're saying. Okay. Because I'm probably thinking a small restaurant, but 240 seats is quite a bit, and to maintain the staff and everything else, you would have to keep it going. Yeah. Oh, okay. That explains it, at least to me, anyway. Do you have a go-to wine that you particularly like? You particularly enjoy?
Go-to wine for what? Is there a price point or an occasion or a?
For an occasion, if you were going to have a wine, let's just say you were going to sit down and enjoy a nice wine of an evening with friends, and do you have one that you would particularly like to open and enjoy?
Nice wine with friends. I mean, the thing that's so great about wine is that it's so diverse, and there's just so many different things for so many different moods. I guess it depends if it's the winter or the summer, and if I'm with friends I like, or friends that I just hang out with, or friends that, you know, there's a lot of variables there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people ask me what's my favorite wine, and I always answer basically what you're saying too. I mean, it really varies depending on the situation, all that. But, you know, I would think have wine that you would prefer over others, and that's what I'm getting at. What wine would you choose in a moderate price range if you were out shopping?
You know, I'm not trying to be difficult in not answering that question. It's just one of those things where I don't know how to answer that, because every wine shop is different. Every season is different, every mood is different, but I can tell you that when I, you know, walk into a wine shop and I'm picking up a bottle to meet a friend, I don't necessarily go to, you know, the classic obvious choices like a Napa Cab or a, you know, a red Burgundy. I see what sort of interesting stuff they might have. What are the little secrets that they, you know, do they have an interesting Chirasuolo or do they have a really fresh, fun Pinot Gris from Alsace? You know, I try and see if there's something interesting, whatever that intrigue might be.
Well, there you go. You did answer the question because, you know, you're looking for something that's not the classic, you know, Cab, Chardonnay, whatever. You're looking for wines that will be, like you say, interesting, intriguing. And so that's basically the answer to the question, I would think. And Mike, you have any comments, any questions, anything for Vanessa?
Let me check. I don't have anything. You've all pretty much answered. I'm looking on different channels here. No, everything's good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have different channels that we look. excuse me. Do you have contact information for the restaurant? Was it Mavericks? Do you have contact information that if someone's going to be in that area, they can contact you or the restaurant or something? And is reservations required? It sounds like it should be.
Reservations are recommended, definitely on weekends. It's something that reservations are definitely. But we're on Resi, and a simple Google search will, you know, will give you our Resi line, our Instagram line, our email line, our restaurant telephone line. We're definitely very easy to find.
Okay, just Mavericks, and that would be it then.
Mavericks in Montauk.
Oh, Mavericks in Montauk. Okay. Yeah, So, all right. Very good. Well, Vanessa, thank you for taking the time this evening this afternoon for you. Oh, no, it is this evening. You're in New York.
Yeah, I'm in New York.
Yeah, in New York, so it's not across the country. Thank you for taking the time this evening to join with us for a while and talk with us and everyone out there. Mavericks in Montauk. Open till when? The end of September, do you say, or?
It's always a little loosey-goosey, but sometime between September and October, yeah.
Okay. So if you're going up there for vacation over this next month here, then check it out. And thank you again, Vanessa, for taking the time to join us tonight, and best of luck to
you. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you very much.
Now.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay. And there you go. Vanessa Price of Mavericks. Her restaurant. Wow. And much bigger than I thought. I mean, you know, a lot of those restaurants are little small intimate places and all, but that just, you know, she cranks out the phone and all that. Spotify popped up. Why did Spotify? I just said Spotify. We're not on Spotify, are we?
Not live.
No.
I mean, we're on it, but we're not live, just the archives.
Yeah. It just popped up here for some reason. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So, tropical depression could be hitting us. Did you see that?
Yes. Been watching it.
Yeah, we may be getting ourselves a whole bunch of rain here real soon. I'm trying to. Why am I having trouble navigating my site tonight? Oh my gosh. I want to get into the news and stuff so I can share it in the next half hour, but I'm not being able to find it. Olympus are still growing strong, so if anyone is, let's see, that goes there, that goes there. Okay, here we go. Maybe I've got no, that's not what I want. Okay, here we go. Olympus still growing strong. We're winning some golds and we're leading on the medal count, and everybody's happy and watching some interesting stuff there. So, all right, here we go. I found an article which I wanted to talk about for a little bit here. Gallo, everybody knows Gallo. Gallo owns like a zillion different companies. But Gallo recently launched into the beer business. They're going in partnership with Montucky Cold Snacks. And Montucky American Style Cold Snacks is a light, sessionable lager. Sessionable. Never heard of that word. Not that it doesn't exist. It's just designated to be crisp, clean, and refreshing. It says it's popular among outdoor enthusiasts and lovers of fun anywhere and everywhere. Montucky has an alcohol by volume of 4.1%, 102 calories, 4.95 grams of carbohydrates per 12-ounce can. So, Gallo is now part of the beer category, and this is the first venture into it. I don't know any article went on to tell a little bit more about the Montucky and, you know, how it's good for river floats and all that stuff and light refreshing and everything. So we're looking at Gallo now in another category. Again, they are always expanding and jumping out there and doing all sorts of stuff. And this is their latest venture into something else. So we may be seeing them expanding a lot. I was going through other papers, and I found my ULO purifier decanter we talked about. When was this? Back in April 21, we talked about this. And I, out of curiosity, I looked it up. And let me look it up again here real fast. ULLO LLC. Let's see if that's... takes me to it here. Wine purifier, ULO. This is the one that the purifier removes sulfites from it, and they have filters and purifiers and glasses and all sorts of stuff in it. I looked it up, and it's still out there. It's still doing their thing. I hadn't seen it anywhere, I hadn't heard it anywhere, but it is still good. Free shipping, free rewards, 15% savings, guaranteed lowest price on the internet through their website. You can cancel anytime. It's a filtering system to remove sulfites. I'm not one to think that sulfites are going to hurt you anywhere in any way. So when someone says they're going to remove sulfites, I look at it with a slanted, you know, roll my eye type look. But obviously people are interested in having the sulfites removed, and this company is going strong because of it. Where to buy? You can get it through Amazon, Total Wines, Williams-Sonoma, Target, Walmart. They all carry it according to their website here. It seems like they're doing quite well. At the time when they first started, when we had them on back in 21, they were just basically just starting out, and according to the website, they're doing really tremendously well. It's based out of Chicago, And it says that wine should be enjoyed the way the winemaker intended, free from sulfite preservatives. Well, yeah. And they're saying with lower histamines, that's usually what gives you the headaches too, is the histamine. So that might be a good thing. It was founded by chemists by the name of Kornacki, James Kornacki, has a PhD. And in 2015, we interviewed him in 2014, so we were right there at the beginning. If you are one to be concerned about sulfites and histamines in your wine, then you might try the ULLO, U-L-L-O. It's, you can punch it in on search engine, any of your search engines. You look under ULLO wine, and it will .com, it will come up, and you can check it that way. So some people are concerned about sulfites and histamines and all that, and it's usually the histamines that gives you the headaches in wine. So there's something you can check into also. If you're always saying you get headaches from wine, it's probably the histamines, usually red wines, that cause it. And this ULLO says that they remove all that stuff. So you can check that out. And let me go back to the inbox here and see. I was not prepared to do a whole lot of talking tonight, as you might be able to surmise. New book out, Uncorking. Let's see. Though we're well into the 2020s, there are forces hell-bent on reviving the great mistake of the 1920s, prohibition. Yes, that's a good point, too, because I have heard different things. People went into a ban alcohol. Idiots. I just saw this article, and it's bloody long. I'm not going to go through the whole thing with you. But I will give you the general idea of it. There are forces hell-bent on reviving the gravest mistake of the 1920s, prohibition. This time, instead of healing what was seen as an ill society beset by alcohol-related problems such as alcoholism, family violence, and saloon-based political corruption, that is a quote from Wikipedia, the justification is more personal, the impact of alcohol on one's health. I've read this to you over and over again about how, you know, they say you should not drink. It's, you know, even one glass is bad for you and it's bad for your health and all this stuff like that. Well, this article is going on with the same basic concept. On January 4th, 2023, the World Health Organization, or WHO, self-righteously proclaimed, and I remember reading this to you and telling you about this, quote, no level of alcohol consumption is safe for our health, end quote. And they went from there, and governments have picked that up, and they have expanded on that, and they have gotten crazy. There is a new book. Tony Edwards has written his second book, and it's entitled The Very Good News About Wine, Authoritative Health Evidence the Health Authorities Don't Tell You. And it goes on and dispels some of the myths and stuff like that about wine that they're coming out with. And he has chapters on diabetes and dementia and the difference between gender and race and how the wine affects you and the effects on weight and your gut and all sorts of stuff here. It might be worth getting the book. I don't know. It doesn't say here. Oh, yeah, here it is. Authoritative Health Evidence the Health Authorities Don't Tell You. The Very Good News About Wine by Tony Edwards. I may get that and read that. That sounds interesting. So there is a constant battle about wine and how much you should drink and how bad it is for you, or and how it can cause problems and everything else. So this seems like this might be an interesting book. I'll make a note of this, and I will see if I can't go online and quite find it. The author, Tony Edwards, if you're all interested. And it's called The Very Good News About Wine. This article, by the way, is from the Oregon Wine Press. So it's a new article. This just came out today. Let's see what else we got to talk about here. Wine clubs are still struggling. I don't know why everybody's trying to promote them. Let's see. Okay. Highly significant impact on wine production from volcanic activity. Okay, let's see what this. We're getting some volcanoes. Excuse me. Volcanoes that are popping up around different places that are going. And this says that this from the University of Stockholm's History Department and Bolin Center for Climate Research looked at the Moselle Valley in northeastern France and southwestern Germany and also eastern Luxembourg, which had been a historic center of wine production and therefore a worthy place for analysis of the impact of volcanic eruptions. They looked at the impact on viticulture due to the climate cooling and using tank records for the number of barrels as well as sulfur data from Greenland and Iceland. In analysis of concentric growth rings of wood plants, colder temperatures were created as a result of the volcano. The team discovered a clear pattern of reduction in wine production in the years after a volcano erupted. So there you go. When they do erupt, it's going to be a problem, but it's been some time since it's happened. They said they found that reduced harvest in the years 1481, 1601, 1674, 1767, 1784. First 5 years after a volcano erupts, they have reduced wine or reduced grape production because it cools the air. That's why. But, you know, that was sort of anticlimactic from what the headline said. I expected something more. Yakima Valley, voted number one best wine region in the United States. In the United States by Reader's Choice Awards. Yakima Valley, number one. Top 10, and these are voted on by people, not, quote, experts or paper people or anything. These are actual Reader's Choice Awards. So the people who voted on these are you and me. The list, Yakima Valley in Washington, number one. Temecula Valley in California, number two. Paso Robles in California, number three. Loudoun, L-O-U-D-O-U-N, Loudoun Valley. It's not Valley, I'm sorry, all the rest of them were. That's in Virginia. Number five, Suisun Valley in California. Sick County in California. Seven, Finger Lakes in New York. Eight, Willamette Valley, Oregon. Nine, Sonoma Valley, California, and 10, Grand Valley, Colorado. So those voted on by readers of USA Today, best wine regions of the country. Good areas there. I've been to seven of them. So all produce great grapes and everything. Okay. Let's see. I'm seeing if there's anything else there. Oh, this might be interesting. I've been talking about this off and on. And you say, how does it affect me? It affects you in price is what it does. Spotted lanternfly. Still around. We haven't mentioned it in a long time. But it's still there. And it is spreading. And again, how this affects you, it affects you by price. Because if some of your favorite wines are being destroyed by the spotted lanternfly, or if they have to dig out vines and replant, it's going to cost more. And guess who pays for it? You, in the long run. So we need to know what's going on with the spotted lanternfly. This article says, New York State and Cornell University experts provide update on the spotted lanternfly and tips for actions they can take to manage the invasive pest. And there's a seminar that was taking place today. It's over now. This just came out. I just saw this today, and it just came out. And yet, this seminar is today from 10:30 a.m. to 11, and it was online. Wow, I wish I'd known that. I'd like to have seen that. Spotted lanternfly is described as a pest that feeds on more than 70 plant species. Wow. 70. I didn't realize. I knew they ate on other stuff, but 70. They were first found in New York State on Staten Island in August 2020. They have been observed in all New York City boroughs now and in several locations across the state. This is not good. They have been detected in Romulus, New York, and the Finger Lakes region. And they're working closely to try to combat them because they can destroy grapevines. An adult spotted lanternfly emerged this summer in New York State, has been hearing concerns. As New York's have emerged, New York residents been hearing concerns about how to control it. And they've been sharing tips as well as information on the life cycle and expected the rest of the summer to try to control it more. And hopefully the winter seasons will kill it. So, I'm sorry I missed that online seminar that they just had. It was only a half hour. No, I was at a doctor's appointment anyway. I couldn't have listened. So, spotted lanternfly in the Finger Lakes area. 70 different plant species that little bug affects. That is frightening what it can do. Okay. Here is a blog. No, we were just talking about it. I'm not going to get into this real deep here. This is a blog called the Snowden Substack. And it's by Christopher Snowden. And it says, cherry picking the evidence on alcohol and health. And he's subtitled, you can prove anything if you discard 99.9% of the evidence. Because he has, you know, flow charts here and all sorts of different things that evidence that shows that alcohol is not bad for your health. I haven't read this yet. I just saw it. I'll have to read through this and see what he says. But I say the same thing. It is not bad for your health. Okay, let's see what else is available in news here. Sorry, I wasn't planning on. Let's see, secret loophole boosting American wine sales in China. Heavy tariffs and tax. But they're working with the importers to cut the tariffs, so that's why. Lyle Vineyards receives Napa Green certification and reduces waste by eliminating foil capsules using lighter bottles and shorter corks. Now, you know, I pulled out a cork the other day, and that thing was like, you know, 30 inches long. Not really, but it was just unbelievably a long cork, and I was wondering why you would use a cork that big. It has to be more expensive. Corks can be expensive anyway, but when you start using longer corks, it's the environmental impact, too. You're harvesting them and all that, but why would you use long corks? It just seems, I don't know, just doesn't seem like a wise thing to do. But they're using shorter corks and lighter bottles, which I have seen different wineries do that, using lighter bottles, which I think is a great idea. I tried to find lighter bottles. In fact, I'd found a source of lighter bottles right about the time we were closing down. Carbon regenerative agriculture, also known as carbon farming. I've never heard it called carbon farming. It's green certification and climate action, regenerative farming, social justice. Reviews of critics. Let's see what else this is. We'll use shorter corks. Longer corks can only be cut from a part of the tree that is difficult to grow and harvest. Shifting to 49 millimeter corks instead, which are more sustainable to produce. There you go. Also, the lighter bottles without a foil capsule. So just the cork popped into it with no capsule on top of it, I guess. They're not doing anything else. So why can't more people do that? I mean, it's a great idea, I think. You know, use smaller or lighter bottles, smaller corks, shorter corks. It doesn't take any effort at all. I've always wondered why wine bottles are so bloody heavy anyway. I mean, if you want to use any household item for a murder weapon, a wine bottle is always thought would be a good one because they are all so heavy. So let's see what else we got here. Prosecco is propelling the imported sparkling wine category. Prosecco is really popular right now. When I was at the store, wine shop a couple days ago, wandering around, looking, picking up a couple bottles. The Prosecco section of sparkling wines was enormous. It's like everybody's jumping on the bandwagon for Prosecco and getting it over to the States. I was in a local shop. It wasn't any chain or anything, but there's a lot of Prosecco wines there. And let's see, Southern Glaciers Wine is one of the significant investment choice company division 2030. You know, I don't see anything here that would be interesting to everything. And let me go eliminate this and look at something else. And let's see, America's incredible shrinking wholesale landscape. That's not vintage wines estate bankruptcy. Vintage wine estates has filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy and is voluntarily delisting from NASDAQ. Vintage wine estates is big. I think I've mentioned that before. Vintage wine estates is a big winemaker, and they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Nearly 400 employees have been laid off 2 months prior to filing. Company went public with a $600 million IPO in 2021. And its shares reached as high as $12.63 a share, but then crashed. The last time the stock was setting at 11 cents. That's when it filed for bankruptcy. The company had about $475 million in assets and $400 million in liabilities. So they still got $75 million. Pay your people. Pay your people. Turnaround came up short. They couldn't get it together. And so they are filing for bankruptcy. It says here at the end of this article, the layoffs can come at a worse time as the U.S. wine industry continues to face declining sales. While stable companies are acquiring smaller brands, it's unclear what the market may be for the future in wine. So, you hate to see stuff like that. Vintage wine sales had a lot of companies under their umbrella, if you will. Their portfolio is a better word. It included 60 labels, including Girard Winery, Clos Pegas, Swanson Vineyards, B.R. Cohn, Vianza, Sonoma, Cameron Hughes, Windsor Vineyards, Batisha, and Layer Cake, among others. They had most of their wines were between $10 and $20 range. Vintage Wine Estates also owned and leases about 1,850 acres of vineyards and operates 11 wineries and 9 tasting rooms, employing 377 people. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, you know, a lot of these brands are really quite common brands. They're all over the place. You see them in wine shops and all that, but they're filing for bankruptcy. And I don't know if that means that they're going to reorganize. Chapter 11, I think, is reorganization, isn't it? They are in the wine business. That's too bad. Hope that the other wineries under their umbrella is not going to all fold up because of this. Let's see what we got here. Nothing. Okay, what is this? Casey Ledecky chases Wine Country's legend. Who is Wine Country's legend? This is Olympic swimmer Katie Ledecky hopes to surpass the 12 medals won by Gardarian Wines co-founder Natalie Coughlin Hall. Natalie, what year did Natalie win all of her medals? Doesn't say. It says that she has a winery now. Where does it say that she won the medal? I'm in Paris on the way to the swim venue right now, which is so exciting, she said when she got to Paris. Her 12 Olympic medals from 2004 and 2008, 2004 in Athens and 2008 in Beijing. She's tied with Jenny Thompson as the most by any female American athlete for now. Let's see. I don't know how many medals that Katie Ledecky has. So, I don't know. That's interesting. We have a young lady who bought herself a winery. I guess you win money for the medals, don't you? I'm not sure how that works. I've never really looked into it. Mike, do you know if you win money for a gold medal or a silver or a bronze?
Last thing I read was just like a couple of days ago, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't know if it's – I haven't checked the validity of it, but it was one of those, you know, news things that popped up, and it said that the medal winners get a lifetime pension the medal winners, that's what they get besides the gold medal, but they get I read somewhere or saw it online or something. So it has to be true if it's on the internet, they get like a lifetime of some sort of a pension. I don't know what that means, but you know, it's like they win and they can retire. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'll have to get some more information.
Is this paid by the countries or is it paid by the Olympic Committee or?
I don't know. I'd have to get into more information. I did just read that Ledecky earned her 13th Olympic medal to become the most decorated woman in the American Olympic history. She has
she
came out of France. So.
Natalie Coughlin Hall.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah.
If you get money and Natalie won 12 medals, then she could afford to buy a winery, you know?
Yeah. Let's see if there's anything on here about compensation. Malperformance, Operation Gold. There's a bunch of different things here that I don't know. I got to look it up because some of this you don't know if it's from a trusted site or if it's an actual thing. But anyway, yeah, I'll have to look it up. Maybe next one. Next show we'll have an Olympian. Champion.
We'll get an Olympian. Show. I should contact. I should contact Natalie Coughlin Hall and see if she.
Mm-hmm.
I got her winery here in Guardian Wines. Maybe. Well, she's in Paris right now, so we can't get her on.
Oh. Yeah.
She just
too late in the morning or too early in the morning for that.
Yeah. We got 6 hours difference here, and so. Yeah. So we'll have to wait until she comes back from Paris, and we'll see.
Right.
All right.
That's the topic. Yeah.
Yeah. We got a guest next week, Gino. He's from the California, I don't know. My head's not working right. But we're going to talk about white wines and the white wines from California. And Sunday, this coming Sunday, the 4th, is White Wine Day. So enjoy some white wine. And then, today is World Albarino Day and also Old Vine Day. So there's a couple of things you can celebrate. Some Old Vine Zinfandel, go out and buy it tomorrow and celebrate it a day late. Also, August is Washington Wine Month, which is odd because they've already had a Washington Wine Month this year. So I don't know. This is the second of two Washington wine months. I guess Washington figures they make enough cool wine that they can have 2 months to dedicate it to it. So got Washington Wine Month. But World Albarino Day, Old Vine Day, and then Sunday White Wine Day. And then next week, Gino will be. Thank you, Vanessa, for taking the time telling us about your journey and about Mavericks Restaurant. Anyone wants to get a hold of Mavericks, just go online, Mavericks in Montauk.
Montauk.
Okay. So just get a hold of it there. And if you're up in the New York area, you've got a lot of seats in that restaurant. Jesus.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Be sure to make reservations and make it quick because they're only open seasonally, possibly through September, maybe some of October. Not sure.
Yeah.
But very seasonal. So
five months. That seems so odd.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
You know, as a waiter, there, I would go 5 months, you know, what am I going to do the rest of the year? I mean, it's, and then you find mm-hmm. yourself another job that's a 12-month job, and you say, okay, I got to quit for 5 months because I'm a waiter at this restaurant, and I really enjoy it, and I get, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know. That just seems odd to me. I just, oh well.
Seasonal.
Yeah. So we're done for another week of All About Wine.
All righty. And we'll talk to y'all next Thursday. Be safe. Have a good weekend and enjoy it. We will be watching the storm here. It's probably just going to be a good rain source like we've been having every day anyway, at least in this part of Florida. But yeah.
Yeah,
we'll still keep an eye on it just in case, because it's still early, and you know there's supposed to be some kind of turn going on tomorrow or you know whatever, and it's been, but see they don't really know yet because it hasn't really fully developed into anything.
It's just sort of a big cluster of mess. You know.
Yeah. It can do whatever they do. And they're unpredictable, but
they are. But you know, they're talking about steering currents, and they're talking about the getting into the Gulf and intensifying. But they're also talking about getting into the Gulf and having the wind shear the top. And they're saying the dust from Africa could cause it. I mean, you know, might get rain. Which is no big deal because we get, like you said, we get rain every day anyway.
Yeah.
So,
minor flooding, major flooding, who knows? But just be safe either way. And we'll talk to y'all next Thursday. Have a good week.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Be safe.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
There's a dead intro. Turn this back off. And...